We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hour two, Mike, let's ride. Hour two of the program, guest week here on the show. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 10 o'clock. Ask Herb was fantastic. We appreciate everyone who participated in it. And this is the week since it's All-Star Week. Some people call today like the most boring day on the sports calendar, although there was some significant news, whether it was baseball or basketball that we can get into. I always like to bring guests in and have them hang out. Some people you know, some people you don't. Some people you can get to know better, like Cameron Smith, who is here. You see him occasionally on CBS2. You see him occasionally on CN100. You see him all the time on Twitter and on Instagram. And now he's here in studio with me. What is up, my man?
Man, it's always good to be back, El. It's refreshing, man. It's good to be back here with you on the show.
Well, the timing for you being here couldn't be better, considering the news of the day with the Bulls and Jabari Parker. Now, listen. You know me. I'm not here to just have you report
right for
us. And I appreciate on Friday, you came on and you really broke it down. And I thought, honestly, like you were ahead of the curve on a lot of the coverage on Jabari Parker, which is appreciated for this show. I do want to talk about you, man. I want to talk about all sorts of stuff. So there'll be a mix of that
okay, in
the hour that we're hanging out here. But I do want to start with Jabari Parker. How long have you been covering Jabari?
Oh, wow. This goes back to really his freshman year at Simeon, and even a little bit further than that, not covering him, but knowing who he was and having a relationship with his family. So the thing about that and that story quickly is I grew up on the west side of Chicago. And for us, if you play basketball, going to the James Jordan Center was a safe haven, right? You know, maybe a few blocks away from the United Center. Jabari's dad, Sonny, ran a youth foundation over there. So if you had a little bit of game and you want to work on your game and learn from some guys that had some pro level experience, you would go to the James Jordan Center. So my brother and I, my older brother, Hodges, we would go there. He's 4 years older than me, work on our games. And for some reason, there would be some chubby little kid just kind of getting in the way of drills or trying to play guys one on one. Or if there was a league game going on during timeouts, he'd jump on the court and work on his form shooting or start doing full court layups. And everybody's like, move, get the heck out of the way. You know, fast forward time, that's Jabari Parker. He stretches out, obviously, to 6'8 to what he is now. But so that history goes back a little while ago, man, back in the 90s with that. So just knowing who he is and knowing his family, man, great kid. And we all know that just hearing him speak. But with him ascending to what he is now, and that started back at Simeon, it's really like a fairy tale story. I mean, this is a kid that has, you know, really won everything, especially on the high school level back when I first started covering him.
Yeah, and he's a different guy. I mean, people will obviously want to group him with other Simeon stars. You know, he got to wear Ben Wilson's number, like all of that stuff. But why is he maybe a different type of guy than other guys that have come through Simeon?
If you sit down and you have maybe a 5-10 minute conversation with Jabari Parker, you will realize that this guy is different. He thinks outside of the box. He really puts a lot of thought and consideration into every word that he says. And this is going back to when he was a kid. You would think that you were talking to a 30-year-old man and the kid is 10, kind of breaking down the game of basketball or just even some things about life. And you're just sitting there looking at him like, man, I got to get my stuff together because this kid obviously is far more advanced than I am. It's just what, you know, he's been around, obviously with his dad, Sonny Parker, being a former pro player, the people that he's, you know, learned the game from, a lot of pros that his dad knows, and just being around the city of Chicago. And the great thing about him and his story is that the city really embraced him as they did with Derrick Rose when he was young. So they provided a nice covering over him to make sure that he was fine. But he does, again, a lot of things outside of the box, like reading, watching documentaries, listening to music. I mean, he goes and doesn't limit himself to just being a basketball player. And there's so many layers to Jabari Parker and how he tries to improve and sharpen certain skills other than basketball. It just makes him a great human being.
You're someone who went through this process of, you know, you're good enough to be a Division I player. So on the high school level, you have people coming at you, you know? Mm-hmm. How would you go about trying to, what advice would you give someone who's in the situation that you were in or Jabari was in? Growing up here and being a basketball star is not easy. How do you navigate that these days versus when you're a lot younger than me, but when but when we were younger, I think it was easier to navigate. I think it's more difficult now. So what advice would you give?
Well, I think easier now because you can go to an AAU tournament for a weekend and drop 31 game and you got 15 Division I offers. It wasn't like that back in the day. You really had to earn that D1 look or that D1 scholarship. I mean, guys really were just cutthroat with it. And there's no knock to the players today, but there's so many AAU tournaments and shootouts going on. If you have a good game at the right time and the right coach is in the gym, he's going to, you know, obviously offer you. Other coaches are seeing what other programs are doing. And if they see you being offered, then they're going to try and jump into the fold and try and offer you as well so that it builds that way. The biggest advice that I can give kids that were in a similar position to me is making sure that you just stand 10 toes down, man. And this is some great advice that I got from Kevin Durant, who I interviewed last week at the Nike Basketball Rise Camp over at Kenwood High School. He came through and just kind of gave the kids a message of just staying 10 toes down. If you're rooted in what you believe in and what you want to do, don't focus in on any of the social media stuff or the outside noise. Just make sure that you're going after your dream. And that was the case for me. I mean, the biggest thing for getting that Division I scholarship on my end was I didn't want my parents to pay for college. And that was a big thing. So they put me in a great position to attend Gordon Tech, Catholic school, had to pay tuition. I knew I couldn't act up in school because I have to have that talk with my dad. Like, look, we're not wasting money for you to act up in the classroom. We want to make sure that you get your education. So that was really my motivation, is to make my parents feel a sense of relief by having not to pay for college. So for me and these kids today is just making sure, again, your circle, your foundation is strong. In Chicago, it's so difficult, man, to just kind of succumb to street agents, guys that are just really leeches, what I call them. They just want to hang on because they just see the next hot product and want to jump on that bandwagon because they think they're going to make X amount of dollars and pimp these kids. And it happens all the time, every day, every year in Chicago, pimp these kids into a certain position where they can now make money and just kind of leave that kid, depending on what their career goes. And most of the time it doesn't work out, but just kind of leave that kid in the dust. So you got to make sure, one, that foundation is strong, again, have that tight circle. And again, just stay with those horse blinders on, man. That's a lesson for life, not just basketball. You got to make sure that you're staying focused on what you want to do and you're invested in it.
What should be the balance for a prep player between AAU and their high school coach or, you know, junior high coach? Like what should be the balance of who they're listening to and why?
Well, again, it's so different nowadays, man, because there's more trust being put in AAU coaches than it is their own high school coaches.
Why is that?
And, you know, it's more because the exposure that's happening now with AAU, and you have the Nike EYBL, or you have the Adidas Gauntlet, or you have the Under Armour event that happens kind of every other week during the summer months. It's that exposure. It's the gifts that these kids are getting, new shoes, the gear, the tights, the book bags, social media stuff. It's all of those things that are more sexier to these kids as opposed to playing a December basketball game on a Friday night where it's freezing out. And depending on who you are, you might not get more coverage depending on, you know, who you are again and who you're playing. So the summer months are just kind of the time where a lot of kids just really focus on and put a lot of trust in these AAU coaches, because these coaches are really trying to sell these kids a dream. Again, leeches latching on to these kids and trying to get their deal no matter how they want it. So it's weird as hell. I see it all the time now. But if it's for me and it's my son, he's going to be believing in his high school coach. And that's just old school. That's the era we come from. You believe in your high school coach. That's the guy that you should have your trust in. Not saying that you shouldn't trust your AAU coach, but at the same time, your high school coach should be that guy having a hand in your recruitment, depending on what that relationship is like, because he knows the ins and out of it. depending on his experience and the players that he's coached, but also he knows you as a player, and there should be a relationship between that coach and those parents as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that a lot of – look, sometimes it's geographic. Like, yeah. You can't – you live in the district, you play in the district, or you can leave the district, go to a private high school. But I feel like that there has to be some digging that is done by the parents, where if you have someone that's good enough that they're going to get looks to play college ball and not have to pay tuition – then it behooves you to really make sure that your relationship with that person who is kind of in control of what they're going to do is strong. And I feel like parents need to do it's a harder job now mm-hmm. for a parent because of all the due diligence that has to be done to make sure your son or daughter is getting what they need academically and from an exposure standpoint.
Yeah, it's a very fine line that you have to toe because you don't want to be that overbearing parent to where you're, you know, telling the coach you should be doing this, that, and the third. Obviously, you got to draw a line. He's the coach for a reason. He should be helping your kid to a certain extent. But at the same time, there are a lot of parents that don't have that basketball background. So they're kind of on the short end of the stick because they don't know how things work, especially when it comes to recruiting and maybe what team your kid should be on or what camp they should be in. Things like that all come into play. And so when you have sometimes a single parent, a single mom that has this star kid and mom has to work, she can't be at every AAU tournament or she can't be at every game. So she's entrusting that coach and you don't know what that relationship and those talks have been like. And the coach is obviously trying to sell her a dream more as opposed to trying to look out for her son, which he should be doing. And you have that case of, you know, a kid making a wrong decision to join a university. And you see it nine times out of 10 where a coach gets an assistant job wherever that kid is going to play ball at school. So if you're a parent, you have to be invested and know the ins and outs. If you don't have that basketball background, tap into a friend or someone that you know of that you can sit down and speak with. So that's why I know for myself, if my son, my 19-month-old son, is blessed to play basketball and he has some kind of skill, I know that I'm going to be invested as well as my brother, my father, because we have that basketball background where he can rely on.
Cameron Smith is here in studio with me hanging out for the 7 o'clock hour. You can check him out on CBS2. You see him there. You see him on CN100 doing great work there. And on Twitter, what's the Twitter account?
Just Cameron Smith. Nothing fancy, but no E in Cameron. Everybody makes that mistake. I understand it, but it's just Cameron Smith.
So Cameron.
Cameron, right. Don't let my mom hear that. She's going to say,
I know.
You know mama don't play. You
see,
know that,
this,
Lauren.
This is the stuff that people don't understand where, like, people will call me Larry, and I'm like, no. Because if you do it around my mom, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Because mom will lean in and poke out that ear and say, excuse me?
Yeah.
No. It's Lawrence or it's Cameron.
Yeah. She named me something specific.
Right.
For a reason. So I got to know, you're someone whose opinion on basketball I really, really trust. You play at the game at the Division I level. You're just a smart guy. I'm curious what you thought of Kawhi Leonard getting traded to the Raptors.
That's a lot of drama in that. That should be a soap opera, man. I mean, just – how San Antonio, how Kawhi, how Toronto handled that situation. I think the person that needs to get the most praise out of all of this and more just kind of comfort and consoling is DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what else does he have to do to prove to Toronto that he wants to be in that city, that he loves that city, and they trade him away? And if you looked at his Instagram story that he posted the other day, it was just kind of cryptic messages he was sending. And he said basically in the final IG video that you guys will find out soon. And today that was it, him being traded to San Antonio for Kawhi Leonard. So if you're the Raptors and their GM, Masai Ujiri, how do you come back from this? I mean, because
this is the NBA, guy that you told was the guy.
And NBA players talk. Like, all of these guys are friends. So if you saw maybe like Dame Lillard's tweet from the Portland Trailblazers, he was just saying that, you know, oh, wow. Or, you know, another guy on that talked about some things, Paul George, was just saying, you know, just all of these things. Like, I can't believe they did that to DeMar DeRozan. This is one of the best two guards in the NBA, and they shipped him out. He was the franchise guy for the Raptors. So this is
and had an incredible year.
Yes.
And so they make the commitment with the dollars. And you're thinking, oh, well, he's okay. It's going to be him and Lowry, and they're going to do what they need to do. And maybe now they have a chance to win the conference because LeBron's no longer here. Yeah. that you got a shot. And now he ends up in San Antonio. Now, I think it ends up being great for DeMar. First of all, them taxes. He's about to come up. No state tax in Texas, right?
Nope, not
He's
at all.
He's about to come up. Yeah. Because that money that he was getting in Canada was getting
sliced. Yeah. In every which way.
DeMar is going to get that first check and be like, ooh-wee, I get to keep all of this money and it doesn't go to taxes? Great.
San Antonio ain't so bad.
The Riverwalk is great. And you get to play for, you know, perhaps the best coach in the league, yes, Greg Popovich, and maybe try to build something down there. But, yeah, there was also a little bit of bleep you to Kawhi on this one. Like, oh, you don't want to play here?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to send you to another country.
Yeah, we're just going to send you away from here, across the border. That's what we're going to do. We're going to send you up north. Up north, north.
You like, can, the true north.
Right,
the
true north.
North,
right, right.
Yeah, you can go ahead and play for the Lakers next year, but you're going to play this year in Canada.
And think about this, Lawrence. Kawhi doesn't want to be in Toronto. He doesn't want to be there. So he's not going to sign that extension after next summer to stay there. Kyle Lowry is another guy that people are forgetting about in this situation. His best friend was traded away from the team. Lowry and DeRozan had an outstanding relationship. They were really the heart and soul of the Raptors team. Now you're looking at this as if you're Kyle Lowry. It's like, okay, why do I want to be here now? And I'm pretty sure they sold him a dream saying, okay, well, we're not doing anything with DeMar. He's going to stay here. We think we have a real good chance in the East. Management-wise, business-wise, I kind of get it from a basketball standpoint. You want to bring Kawhi to your team, but not a disgruntled Kawhi. I mean, we've seen disgruntled Kawhi, and that was last season in San Antonio where we basically didn't see him because he was just holding out and wanted to be away from the Spurs organization. It'll be the same thing in Toronto.
Do you think there's anything to the idea of we can do with Kawhi what Oklahoma City did with Paul George? He'll come here, he'll love it, we'll convince him to stay.
Not a chance. Not a chance. Remember this, Kawhi is an LA kid. He loves warm weather. Toronto's cold. It's freezing up there in Canada. He does not like that. So keep that in mind as well. As much as these players obviously are in the gym, you know, 90% of their day, they are grown men. They like to go out and, you know, enjoy themselves, have a good time, whatever it is. But if you're Kawhi and it's freezing out in Canada, it's wintertime, what are you going to do? So there was a GM, an anonymous GM, that was quoted in a tweet today saying that, you know, during the All-Star game when it was back in Toronto, what was that, last year, a couple of years ago, that Kawhi just basically stayed in his room. He's a guy that doesn't like the cold. So
he stayed in his room, showed up for all of the stuff.
Yeah.
And bounce.
But I was gone. Yep, I'm gone. I'm not hanging out. I'm not doing nothing. Let me go back to my room. It's too cold in Toronto.
Have you seen the Carter Effect Netflix?
I have.
How great is that?
It is. It's awesome. What about Chuck Swirsky getting a cameo in there, man?
Chuck is all up in there. And you know who produced that?
Who's that?
LeBron James.
Wow.
Because I remember I was watching it on the plane, and they had like a full in-depth interview with LeBron. I was like, damn, how did they do that? And then I watched the credits, like, executive produced by LeBron. I was like, oh, okay.
Makes sense now.
So that's what it is. But that thing, I thought it was cool how many players were affected. Like, how many guys in the league right now grew up going, oh, I don't have to play hockey.
I can
play basketball because of Vince Carter.
Well, you remember when that documentary first started and they talked about the attendance they were getting before Vince got there. Toronto, an expansion team. It's basketball in Canada. Who's going to play basketball in Canada? As you mentioned, Canada, that's a country of hockey.
And Toronto, that's it.
Yeah, right. That's the heart. That's the blood. That's the soil right there. That's all of it. And you're trying to bring and make basketball popular. And again, Vince Carter is a guy that just changed that whole dynamic in Toronto. And I'm glad he's getting his due because he had a huge impact, not just in Canada, but just on the game in general. What he did, a lot of people go back to the dunk contest in Oakland back in 2000. I remember sitting in my parents' living room, videotaping it on VCR, and just couldn't believe it. Yeah, that's how far we go back. But videotaping it on VCR and his first dunk, the reverse 360 windmill, that's something that you remember that's etched in your brain for the rest of your life.
I try to let people know, like, I think his performance is probably the greatest performance in a dunk contest. I also make the argument that was the greatest dunk contest.
Ooh.
People forget. Steve Francis and Tracy McGrady put on a show.
That's true.
In that dunk contest. And it took some straight up Superman stuff from Vince Carter. And I mean, it was like, your mouth is agape watching that guy because it just felt like he had springs in his shoes and he could just do whatever he wanted. You know what makes me laugh whenever I see it? The dunk that he makes and then he lands and then he jumps, like jump turns when he lands.
The second jump, yeah.
And I'm just like, how is this even possible? That a guy can do stuff like that.
Them Florida boys, man, they're bred differently down there, man. But
Alex Brown's gonna hear that, and then he's gonna have something to say. He's always saying that to us every weekend. He's like, he's from Florida. Obviously, he's going to be great.
Man, Vince was one of a kind, man. And still going at it, too. That's the crazy thing. He's still active in the NBA.
What, 19 years in the league now for Vince Carter?
I think he might call it quits when he gets to year 20. But, you know, this is a guy that, God, has played against so many legends, so many iconic players. LeBron, Kobe, T-Mac. I mean, his cousin. That's his cousin, T-Mac. So what he's able to do, Iverson. Forgot about that when they matched up in the Eastern Conference Finals. But what he's been able to do to sustain that success in Toronto, and, you know, things soured out there, but they still embraced him when he came back. It took a little bit of time, but they still embraced him. But what he was able to accomplish with the Raptors in making basketball relevant in Toronto and the country of Canada, it's outstanding.
If you have not seen The Carter Effect, we highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. If you're a hoop head, if you love basketball, you will thoroughly enjoy it. It's great, and there's a good history, and you can learn a little bit about Toronto, which to me is a lot like Chicago, even like the way that it's positioned on the lake. But like, you go there, if I dropped you there in downtown Toronto, you might be like, am I in Chicago right now? It's even like Lakeshore Drive, like right where we'd be situated here in the city. So anyway, Cameron Smith is here in studio with me. We're gonna hang out until 8 o'clock. We are going to continue to talk a little bit of basketball and get into some other stuff, too. You're listening to The Score. This segment is being brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up a screener question, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. Cameron Smith is here with me in studio. You can see him on CBS2. You can see him on CN100. And you can follow him on Twitter at Cameron Smith. C-A-M-R-O-N Smith. There. Yeah, no E. Don't put the E in his name because it doesn't belong in his name.
Because you'll have Mama Smith coming after you.
And you don't want that.
And she's on social media. So
is she
out.
Really?
She is.
Good for her.
She is. So she's got eyes out there. So just be careful.
I tried to... My mom was like, should I get on Facebook? And I was like, no.
But you know what? I think Facebook is a nice safe haven for our parents.
See, I used to believe that with all the data breaches and stuff I'm more concerned than ever. I feel like she should just get on Instagram. Like, just do that. And I know that Instagram is Facebook, but just get on Instagram and just, you know, that's all you want. You just want to see pictures.
My mom has it all. I mean,
really?
But she's more of a lurker on Instagram. She has maybe two posts. That's about it. And likes a post here and there, but she does more lurking than posting on IG.
I actually think that might be a good way to go about dealing with social media. Like, I understand the importance of it. Obviously, you want to extend your brand or whatever, but I think that it gets a lot of people in trouble. I think Wright Thompson, and we saw it last night with Josh Hader.
Yeah.
Well, Wright Thompson had it right that for the most part, all it can do is get you fired.
Yeah.
Now we need it as a news gathering tool, but that doesn't mean that we necessarily have to tweet. You know, I think your mom actually's got it right that you use it to lurk on Twitter instead of tweeting. I've been really like wondering about it. Like, I'm taking the next couple days off, and one of the tips that I heard is you should. Take the app off your phone if you're on vacation. That way, when you're tempted to reach for your phone and get on Twitter, it's not there. Now, you can obviously like not kill your account, but just, you know, upload the app back into the cloud for a couple of days. And I think I might do that.
That's
I might see, because I know how I am, that when I go to bed, I go to bed. Like, that's it. Like, the phone gets plugged in and I move on with my night. But when I wake up, it's right next to me. I pick it up. I'm looking at the news. A lot of it's bad. So I've been going through and kind of looking like, do I really need to follow this many news outlets? Because you're getting the same information over and over and over and over and over again. And sometimes it's not great. Like, it's not great news. So I worry about this stuff all the time. I didn't mean to just get on the couch right there and just.
But that's good information, though. That's good information.
Have you play Dr. Smith for a minute.
Let me get up my pen and pad.
Just saying, it's something that I think about. Because I think do think you have to be really careful about this.
You do. You do. And so many people rush to judgments on social media, especially Twitter, and just want to kind of hound people, the trolls out there. And we've seen what happens, you know, when people kind of take it a step too far, you get revealed on who you are and, you know, where you work, and you end up losing your job. So you got to make sure that you're handling social media the proper way and using it what it's meant for. And that's to connect, share information, share news. When you take it to the dark side, that's when it turns on and it becomes an enemy.
How much are you paying attention to what the Cubs are doing?
I've been in and out, to be honest, this season. I haven't given too much sweat into their struggles. And the whole fire Joe Madden thing, I still don't get and how people quickly turn on them. But if you look, obviously, with them now, they have the best record in the NL. So he seems to be doing all right. He won a World Series. What is the beef?
I personally, it has been a real big problem for me that we spent a lot of time talking about on the show over the last few weeks of trying to quantify what managers do and their value. And I feel like his great value as a manager is the way that he manages people.
Yes.
I don't think that he's necessarily a great game manager, but I think that his value, like if we were doing it on a sliding scale, like if I think Joe Madden, the game manager, is a 5 or a 6 on a scale of 1 to 10, I think he's a 10 on handling people.
Yeah.
So you put those two things together and you have a manager who's an 8. So why would you not want that?
Yeah.
And I do get the frustration that people have with some of the strategic stuff that happens, but you look up, and I was taking these calls up till the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Up till the weekend, wow. I was taking those phone calls. And then what happens? You have the Pirates win 5 games in a row from the Brewers, and then you have the Cubs sweep in San Diego, and boom, they're up 2.5 games in the division.
Yeah.
And now the Brewers can't even get Manny Machado.
Because he's going to L.A., baby, with the Dodgers.
He is going to the Dodgers.
And it's something similar in terms of you know, head coaches, managers, but I liken it to Steve Kerr with the Golden State Warriors. He's a great people person. He's a great, you know, just people manager, and making sure that, similar to Joe Madden, you have all of these great pieces on your team that you have to put in great positions to have them showcase their talent. At the same time, you got to make sure that everyone is on the same page. Everyone likes each other. Everyone's kind of getting their piece of the pie. And that's a great thing that Joe Madden does, and also Steve Kerr does. So you can knock them and say, okay, well, strategically or game management or what they're trying to do sometimes doesn't work. Yeah, I get that. There's going to be errors in coaching, but at the same time, I would like you said with Joe Madden, if he's like a 5 or 6 or 7 maybe on the game management scale from 1 to 10, he's definitely a 10 on the people manager when it comes to the Cubs. So I would take that any day over someone that's just opposite of that.
Yeah, there's someone who's great strategically, but maybe can't get through to guys the way that Madden obviously has been able to. Well, when you played ball, you know, you played at Southern, what were some of the things that you wanted out of coach?
Oh, man, to stop killing us. We were blessed to during that run from 2003 to 2007, and even a couple of years before that when Bruce Weber was the head coach at SIU, to just have an outstanding run in the Valley and also in the tournament. My freshman year came in 2003. This is after Bruce Weber left and started his first year over in Champaign with the Illini, and Matt Painter took over that my freshman year in 2003. And I always say this about Coach Painter. He's probably one of the coolest coaches that I've ever played for. And you see him and you think, okay, you know, 6'5", 6'6", white dude, you know, from Indiana.
Looks like Vince McMahon or Shane McMahon.
Right, exactly. You know, with a little, you know, box cut and all that. You know, he's going to be just, you know, unrelatable. I can't talk to him. How do I connect with him? And when you sit down and have a conversation with them or you're in practice with them, like, oh, man, this dude is, you know, just like an old high school coach, or he might as well be from Chicago, just in terms of, you know, how he coaches you, how he brings certain things out of you that you didn't know that you had. So that was one of the one things that I love about Matt Painter, and what I expected from him was to really push us to that next level. So when he decided to leave and take the associate head coach position at Purdue, when Gene Katy was still the head coach for the Boilermakers in the Big Ten, we brought in Chris Lowry, who's an assistant for SIU under Bruce Weber. Spent some time with Bruce over at Illinois when they had their run to the 2005 championship. They lost to North Carolina, and for him, it was his first coaching job in that kind of atmosphere, that type of platform, and he just went just kind of ridiculous in terms of the off-season conditioning, the practices. Let me tell you a story about this. We as a team were getting killed so much in preseason conditioning that we had a players only meeting in the locker room during the summertime, and as a team went up to Coach Lowry's office and said, "Coach, you're killing us, man. You got to lay off. This is too much," because we would be up in the morning. And this is nothing new. I mean, if you're a Division I athlete, no matter what sport you're in, it's mostly like a full-time job when you're working out. But the amount of exercises and the intensity, and if you made one mistake, you had to do it over and over and over again. And we knew, obviously, when you're being coached, that you have coaches that are going to yell. Some coaches try and motivate certain different ways. But what we were going through and what our bodies were trying to keep up with, we were going to be broken before the season even started. So we went up to his office and said, "Coach," and had the seniors do it. We were smart about that. Had the two team captains do it. Darren Brooks, who was recently inducted into the Missouri Valley Conference Hall of Fame, as well as SIU's Hall of Fame. And Stetson Harrison, who had a great career with the Salukis, had them go up and talk to Coach Lowry. And we kind of stood in the back, the younger guys, and was like, "All right, let's just sit back here and not say anything
let's
stupid.
Let's see what happens."
Right, right, exactly. We're like little kids. We're little kids when mom and dad are talking. So they kind of give the message to Coach, and we're just in the background, just like shaking our head, giving him the puppy dog eyes. And he stops and says, "Listen, guys, this is my first year, and there are a lot of expectations on me. I know that you guys were used to a certain way and being coached by Bruce Weber. Some of you guys are juniors and seniors. Some of you guys that are freshmen and sophomore were coached by Matt Painter. They all have different styles, as do I. I want to make sure that we are prepared when the season starts that we can play my brand of basketball." And it was coined Floor Burn U. And that was the title that America gave us, because we were one of the best defensive teams in the United States in Division I college basketball. And so when we started to see the benefits and the just frustration we would give opponents when it came to guarding the ball full court, like, "Oh, okay, Coach, now we understand why, you know, we almost died in preseason conditioning and why we had to, you know, do things at like 5-6 in the morning every single day. We understand it now," because it resulted in, you know, some of the best teams in SIU history making it to the tournament, winning the Valley Conference, having a guy like Darren Brooks be back-to-back conference player of the year and defensive player of the year, something that hasn't been done since Larry Bird was at Indiana State. Mm. So it all made sense. But what I always looked for in a coach, especially on that level, was to make sure that, one, they had my back and that I can talk to them about things outside of basketball. Did they have their best interests or my best interests in their hearts and their minds? So that's the connection level that a lot of players kind of seek when it comes to being coached on the college level, even the high school level as well. But a lot of players now know that, you know, that next stepping stone, if you want to pursue those basketball aspirations after college, is making it to the pros. And you want to make sure your coach puts you in a good position.
How are you motivated as a high school player and as a college player? Like, you know, some guys like the pat on the back. Mm-hmm. Some guys need the kick in the butt. What type of player were you?
There's only one way to be motivated from Chicago when you play basketball, is being yelled at. That's the only way. I think this city is bred to just be tough, one, mentally, and tough physically. So by the time I got to, you know, SIU in that college level, if a coach was yelling at me, I didn't, you know, take it personally. It's just them. That's what they were doing. But It's something that I was used to back in my high school days with my high school coach and Scott Bogomil. And even when my dad had me and my brother in grammar school, he would get after us. So there was no slacking on any end. So I was used to or accustomed to being coached that way, to being pushed. So that's what I knew would get the best out of me. Hey, get after me. Don't let me slack if I'm, you know, dogging it in a drill, or if I'm not playing up to the level that I should be, let me know about it. And that's what the difference is in kids now, that they don't want to be yelled at. Or if a coach is getting after them too much, then the parents jump in and say, okay, well, calm down a little bit, coach. A lot of players need someone in their face. And, you know, obviously it's a fine line you got to toe with.
Well,
that.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, yeah. How do you find the balance between the – because I do think that there are kids who – need a hug versus a kick in the behind.
Right, right. You know, can't coach everyone the same. Yeah, right. definitely.
So how do you strike that balance? Like, I think that's a hard thing for a coach to develop. And again, to get back to Joe Maddon, I think he knows the guys he can tweak.
Yeah.
And I covered Lovie Smith for a really long time. And look, Lovie in public never lost it. Like that was mm-hmm. not his demeanor. He's never going to emote publicly. But what I learned covering the team is that he was an expert manipulator of those guys, like understood the guy that needed not necessarily to be yelled at, but to be challenged.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard stories from guys going into the office and love and be like, oh, hey, big guy, you know, we could use some more sacks on this team. And I mean, I look at some of the other guys around the league and they're getting all sorts of sacks and I think you're a better player than a lot of those guys, and you're not getting them. It makes me wonder what's going on. Like, he was apparently really good at finding that thing,
yeah,
that tweaked the player without having to lose his voice, and he doesn't cuss.
Uh-huh.
Like, so, I mean, he found a way to develop. I think that's a really tough skill to master.
I agree. And the biggest thing with Lovie or with Joe or coaches that I've played for is the common theme within all of them, and that I've talked to other players that, you know, are good friends of mine, when they talk about great head coaches that they play for, is that the coach always had a pulse on the team. They were always tapped into what was going on. So there was no kind of shut off of communication after practice or after a game. If you had a coach that had a great relationship with you, invite you over to their house, just kind of talk, watch a game with you, whatever it is, then that coach can understand that, okay, well, I can talk to or kind of push, you know, Lawrence or Cameron this way and maybe kind of back off a little bit on these other two guys or a few guys the other way, because it just, again, it goes into relationships, it goes into backgrounds, how certain kids are raised. All of those things play a part into how you coach a player and if you can get on this player or, you know, be a little bit more softer and cuddlier with the other player and trying to motivate them to get the best out of them. So it's a nice game of double dutch. You know, you got to kind of find, you know, that right moment when you jump in the rope, right?
Why do you think Loyola was so successful this past year?
Oh,
and
man.
What was it like to kind of cover that from afar?
It was fun. The biggest reason why it was fun, because my former teammate, Brian Mullins, was an assistant or is an assistant on that Loyola team and just got promoted to associate head coach. So I'm excited for him about that. Brian and I go back years. So he played at Downers Grove South. I played at Gordon Tech. We first played against each other back in the York Holiday Christmas tournament. And he was a sophomore and just, God, was nice with it, especially handling the ball. And for me, and knowing the makeup of Ryan and his dad, Mr. Mullins, who runs the Illinois Wolves Under Armour AAU team, he's just a tough kid. He's really tough, and that's what I remember about him at his SIU days. Defensively, he was tough, one of the best defenders in school history. I think he's second all-time in career steals. Had a little bit of a short pro career just because of injuries, but I knew with the makeup of Loyola's team and the coaching staff that they had, with obviously Porter Moser, who was outstanding, very veteran head coach that just knew how to win, and having the assistants that he had around him with Brian, who was just tapped in defensively, who knew how to kind of motivate guys to get the best out of them. I knew that Loyola was going to be fine and that they were going to make a nice run in the tournament. So it was fun. I mean, you don't associate Loyola with going to the tournament or going to the Final Four. So it was a great breath of fresh air for the city, because we need it. Because no one else is really, to be honest, no one else is doing that. And that's the honest truth. We needed Loyola's resurgence, and I think that they're going to be here to stay. They have a lot of guys coming back.
I'm with you, and I'm a DePaul guy, so I'm kind of predisposed to not like Loyola. Yeah. You know, but it's hard to not like what they did. And I've said this before. I'm super jealous. Like, as a DePaul fan, yeah. I'm so jealous. Like, yeah, we got this big, beautiful building. I mean, Wintrust is great. I enjoy watching games. I went to go see the Sky play there last week. I had a great time watching the Sky play there. But I look at the campus experience mm-hmm. of a Loyola game, and I was at DePaul when we still had Alumni Hall. So when we still had the campus facility, and our little barn was great. Yeah. It held like 6,000 people.
It's a classic building.
Which is exactly what they have at the Gentile Center. It's about that many people can fit in there. And I've loved what they've built. Porter is I love talking to Porter. Porter came on the show early on in the season. I think Kirby booked him in like October. Mm-hmm. And we got him on, and the reaction we got from people who were listening was amazing. It was like, I want to play for that guy. And if that comes through in a phone interview on a radio station, imagine what that's like in a living room. Imagine.
He sells you.
Right.
Yeah, it's big. It's big. And the one thing I remember about Porter when I was at SIU during his time at Illinois State, and just to be honest, we would get after Illinois State. It wouldn't be a contest. But still, the one thing that I remember about Porter, he would always be up still coaching, though.
I
had to, you know, I had to. Just to remind people that SIU ran the Valley for a nice amount of years. But Porter, just a guy that, you know, obviously had a playing career. But he's a competitor, man. That's what a lot of kids gravitate towards. If they can see their head coach, obviously that has background experience playing the game, but then is leaning up on their seats or in their seats, kind of talking to you and trying to sell you on their program and just letting you know why they need you. For me, that drew me in when I was going through my coach visits when they were coming to my house. It was just, I want you to tell me why you need me and how I can help. And if you have a coach, and a lot of kids, I've heard stories about this, coaches kind of come in and, you know, some of these bigwig coaches, not naming any names, but I've heard a story of one coach in particular from one of these blue blood schools came in and just put his feet up on the player's mom's table and put his hands behind his back and let his assistants kind of handle the in-home visit.
Man,
and
you have to get out of my house.
Uh-huh. And mama basically said, okay, thank you for your time, coach. After 5 minutes of the assistant coach speaking, said, coach, thank you for your time, but, you know, you can leave. Just as blunt as that. And so you got to make sure, again, that you are able to sell not only yourself, but your program. And Porter does a great job of that. And you can just see it, you know, with the guys that he has there now and the guys that he's going to have in the future.
Yeah, I get excited for them and a little sad for me. I need DePaul to turn around.
Yeah.
Like, I need it. Like, and the thing is that I am a little bit satiated by how great of a program Doug Bruno runs with the women's team. Like, they're an exemplary program.
Yeah.
They're always in the NCAA tournament. They usually win a game or two in the NCAA tournament. But it's been so long since the men's team has been good. It's frustrating for someone who loves DePaul as much as I do. And I was so happy for Loyola because you're right. The city needed it.
Yeah.
Things with the Bulls were bad. The Blackhawks were bad last winter, and the Bears were bad last winter. So you're looking up in the middle of the winter like, well, the Cubs don't start for a little while longer. And White Sox fans knew that their team was going to be bad this season. So for the amount of time, like the pocket of time for college basketball, like for them to be able to be good, and I think capture a lot of people's imaginations and their hearts, and like people who are, like me, predisposed to not like Loyola because of old rivalries, we're like, go get them.
Yeah, do
like,
it.
Like, go out there and win and put some pressure on some of these other teams. Put pressure on DePaul by winning. I love, like as a DePaul fan, I know I feel like I'm on, like, doing a screed now. But as a DePaul fan, I love that Loyola went to the Final Four. I love that now the bar has been raised.
Yeah.
Because you can see, and granted, it's the Valley versus the Big East, but you can see that it can be done.
Yeah, it can happen.
So let's do it.
And you got to make sure that you look back to not just Loyola, but Northwestern when Chris Collins, they started to make their ascent.
Absolutely.
And so DePaul's looking at them like, okay, well, what are we not doing that they're doing? And now Loyola makes this historic run to the Final Four. And I think the great thing about their story is that they had great stories. Sister Jean, who became like a worldwide star. This is an underdog program, an underdog team that just captured the hearts of the world, really.
I mean, even you hear the stories of Porter Moser as the team is getting better, is going to the dorms.
Yeah.
And knocking on doors saying, we want to create a great environment for this team. Please come to a game.
He's tapped in. You have to be tapped in if you want to develop a program. And I think that's the one major thing that DePaul is lacking. They're not tapped in, especially when it comes to the city of Chicago.
It's really hard for me, man. Like, it's really hard for me.
Listen, you're talking to a guy that, you know, played for a great SIU program, and just to kind of see them, they're having a little bit of a resurgence now in recent years.
Well, they made it to the Final Four of the Valley, right?
They did. But there were some dark days some years
for
ago.
Sure.
So I feel your pain when it comes to just trying to understand why we can't just, you know, ascend to what we were before. So,
and the thing is, and I feel pretty comfortable that I speak for a big group of DePaul fans. We're not asking to even go to the Final Four. Like, real talk. Like, can you get into the halfway point of the Big East and can you make a tournament?
Yeah.
That's all I want. Yeah. Like, and you know what? Get to the NIT. How low are my expectations right now, Cameron? Get to the NIT. That's all I want.
Just some kind of exposure, some kind of pulse. Season tournament exposure. But when you find what you find with that, Lawrence, and you know this as well because you've been around sports and you covered it, when you are having success, you have that next generation looking at your success. So whether they're in eighth grade or junior high or in high school, it helps with recruiting. That builds your story. And it's been so long that DePaul has had good, solid success that it's like, okay, well, who's played here? And that's a lot of kids don't know who's played at DePaul because their success was years ago. The last, to my knowledge, the good DePaul team was back when Quentin Richardson was there, along with Bobby Simmons as well.
You had a tournament team in 2004, 2005.
Okay.
But still, like, your point is well made that you're still like, who are the people that connect me? Now, I will say this. If you haven't seen Max Strus ball, that kid can ball.
He has it. He does.
I'm looking forward. I'm glad that he is going to be back with the Blue Demons this year. And I really, he's got everything you want.
Yeah.
You know, he's athletic. He's tough as nails. He can shoot the three. He's a fun player to watch. They got a couple of guys like that I really, really like. I need it so badly. Like, as a DePaul fan, I need something good to happen for the Blue Demons this year. Again, thanks for letting me get on the couch.
You know what? I got to make sure to bring my pen and pad next time, man, so I can fully get these notes down so we can have a second session on this.
So I can, you know, work through a lot of this stuff and try to...
There's a lot of pinned up frustration in there.
I try really hard not to talk about DePaul.
Yeah.
Because I...
But you're invested. I mean, there's no way around that.
There are two teams that I'm invested in. In this job, you know, once you become a reporter, it's difficult to have a fandom.
Yeah.
So, like, I wouldn't consider myself a Bears fan. I am a Bulls fan, but again, I spend enough time covering the Bulls that it's not the same. Like,
yeah.
I don't emote the same. I still emote for the White Sox, and I still, like, the DePaul thing, that's the place where I'm crazy. Like, that's the one thing where I relate to the people that I talk to probably better than anything else. Because that's the, when I'm at home not calling the games, I'm throwing remote controls. I'm screaming at the television. You know, my wife understands that when there's a DePaul game on and the way things have gone for the last decade, she understands that I am going to be grumpy.
So she's going to give you your space.
Absolutely. Cameron, let me tell you something. There's a time, like, calling games, like, things got so bad. I'll never forget this as long as I live. I've told this story before, but I think about this all the time. We're at Louisville. We got destroyed. Like, destroyed at Louisville. I think we lost by 48 points or something. Just awful. And in that game, Dar Tucker got out on a breakout and did, like, a highlight dunk. And I want to say that, like, Zach made the call, was like, yeah, and DePaul's down 38. And I remember being on the bus. You know, we're on the bus with the team, and this Louisville fan, he must have been 8 or 9 years old. He peeks into the bus, and he didn't say this mockingly. He said, "Hey, DePaul, I hope you guys get better." And I was like, wow.
That's tough, man. That's low. Like, you have to feel, like, just minuscule in that moment. For an 8-year-old to come on the – to have the confidence and the courage to get on the bus, peek in, not rush, not just, you know, calmly just – guys, I hope you get better.
I hope you get better, guys.
I feel really sorry for you guys.
Like,
you guys, you tried, but you have some things to work on. Just do better.
And
do better, guys.
Me and Zach looked at each other, and I was like, this is rock bottom. This is it. This is right here. This is the moment right here. Cameron, it is always a pleasure, sir. Thank you for coming in and hanging out.
Thank you for having me, yo. I appreciate it, man. Always fun. Always fun. Just make sure that, you know, when we have these sessions, I got to bring my pen and pad so I can take some notes.
Next time I'll have you bring the pen and pad in so you can help me out. But you, sir, are always welcome on my show.
Thank you.
If you ever have anything that you want to do, you come on through, man.
I will be back soon. Definitely.
Cameron Smith is a good man. You should follow him. Cameron Smith. No E in Cameron. We're going to take a break. Our buddy is in the house, and it looked like she brought baked goods. So... like, I already adore her. Did she bring, like, the realness with the baked goods? Ooh-wee! Back after this on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.